You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Our last piece today is from Oscar Perez, who is just constantly with us on the news team, which I very much appreciate. He spoke to Samuel Miller McDonald, a journalist, writer and student currently based in the UK for his studies at Oxford, and they spoke for over an hour. But their discussion around COVID-19 can be understood as a discussion on a need for systems change. And you would have heard a few of these segments earlier where they touched on the climate and liberties. Today, though, we're hearing about national emergencies. So when COVID-19 arrived on the shores of the UK, Miller McDonald wrote an op-ed for The Guardian detailing common patterns that emerge from national emergencies and how these could possibly occur again with COVID-19. Oscar started by asking Miller McDonald to explain those patterns and whether they were likely to emerge if they hadn't already with COVID-19.
The piece starts out just looking at September 11th terrorist attacks in the U.S. and the Great Recession in the U.S., the collapse of the housing market, and made the case that both of those emergencies elicited a similar response from the government. And that response was basically to do two things. One, to consolidate power. Two, to consolidate wealth. And the former happened in the case of 9/11, when the Bush administration started passing all of these laws like the Patriot Act, with, you know, of course, complete consent from Congress, which really kind of pushed the limits of what the Constitution guarantees and even pushes past that, I think some would argue, and set some legal precedents that have been compounded, have been since in 2012, Obama passed an expansion to one of those, the NDAA, which went very far in sort of consolidating that executive power and the ability to, for instance, indefinitely detain citizens. And the second happened, the concentration of wealth happened in the first case in 9/11 with the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, which involved moving trillions of public dollars into, you know, defense contractors and private contractors who played a huge role in the operations of those invasions and occupations. In the case of the housing market collapse, that wealth concentration happened with the bailout, with the Wall Street bailout, which is, you know, essentially what it was. It was this massive injection of, again, you know, trillions of dollars, moving that from the public treasury into these private companies and private bank accounts. And what the piece was about was basically that this emergency opens the door for those kinds of abuses to happen again. And there have been a couple of indications that the Trump administration will follow that pattern. But, you know, I think at this point, it's still kind of rapidly changing. And, you know, there's this stimulus that is being debated. And I think there's a way to address these kinds of national emergencies that don't involve doing those two things. You know, we don't have to try to consolidate power in the executive or consolidate wealth in private corporations and private bank accounts. And, you know, those things don't solve the problem, right? It's not like those are just unfortunate consequences of solutions. Those don't do anything to actually solve the problem. It's just an opportunity for people who want more power and money to, you know, get more of those things. The point of the Guardian piece that I was trying to get through was that there are a lot of times when you can be, when that doesn't have to be the choice, you know, that's a sort of false choice between safety, security, and civil liberties. And that I think there are a lot of actions that governments can be taking that can be both protecting people from this virus and also increasing civil liberties. So, for instance, I kind of included this list of responses that I think can do that. And the first one, for instance, was the subsistence level universal basic income. And I think it's a good illustration of this principle of being able to both protect people and expand civil liberties. And so that does that, I think, by one, providing the means to basically self-isolate more than many people have the means to do right now, either, you know, preventing people from having to go out to work or from having to make, you know, multiple trips to the supermarket. If there's this sort of guaranteed source of income that people can plan for and shape their lives around, it's these kinds of, you know, self-isolation lockdown measures are a lot more feasible to do without force, you know, without enforcing with fines. And I think the second way is by ensuring that there's continued access to healthcare, that at least in the States, and I know this isn't as much a problem in the UK where there's an NHS, and I think I don't know New Zealand's health system as well, but I'm sure it's not as insane as the US, where people are foregoing care because they can't afford it, and having some kind of guaranteed income stream, I think, is a way to protect people and just give them the freedom to have money and be able to purchase what they need and not worry about going bankrupt because they got sick.
With two internationally received but US-specific examples in 9/11 and the 2008 housing market crash, Miller McDonald reiterated that although rooted in America, these patterns can and have emerged elsewhere, each attuned and different depending on the locality.
Absolutely dependent on circumstance and locality and culture and the political system there. I think these patterns will express themselves in very different ways depending on where they're occurring. And I think some of the principles in that piece can be broadly applicable. I don't think they need to be specific to a US context. I think you can be wherever these kinds of lockdowns are taking place or wherever civil liberties are being put on the scale. I think you can be trying to approach these issues from a standpoint of maximizing both protection and civil liberties. And I think it's even within the US, it's more complicated. You have, I think, a lot of state governments in the US that are very earnestly trying to do this, trying to save people's lives and protect civil liberties. And I think there's less of an attempt to follow this pattern of concentrating wealth, concentrating power, even often in opposition to the federal government. And we've just seen that recently with states, saying they're going to band together to access PPE because the federal government is withholding it. And I think that conflict, even within countries, can really impact this. And I think it comes down to the more accountable the level of government we're dealing with, the more accountable they are to the people they're trying to protect, I think the easier it is to protect civil liberties as well. And the less accountable, the more likely they're going to fall into this pattern of just, not being concerned with their citizens, but being more concerned with maintaining this, a consolidated executive and consolidated wealth.
They continued by discussing the opportunity that national emergencies and crises present us with in breaking these patterns and taking new paths into the future.
What I think this is illustrating is that, like you say, a lot of these practices and institutions and things that we take for granted are really arbitrary. And it's breaking up the sort of hold that they have on our lives. And I think the one positive to that is it makes it easier to imagine alternatives and imagine pathways to actually bringing those alternatives into the world. And I think, on my most optimistic days, I think climate emergencies can do something similar. I think they offer this opportunity for breaking apart these really old, lingering power structures that have been impossible to break open. And of course, the inverse to that is that the new power structures that replace them could be a lot worse. And I think the way in which we respond to this crisis, but also other, climate ecological emergencies going into the future, is really going to determine those kinds of power structures that get baked in to the 21st century and what becomes possible and how we respond to future crises. I think it's a real kind of feedback situation where responding to this and others like it with authoritarianism will just breed more authoritarianism and make it all the harder to imagine these better, more fair, more free ways of ordering society into the future.
That was Oscar Perez speaking to Samuel Miller McDonald. You can find the full chat online in the BCAS.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/BCasts.